Good morning. It's a good opportunity this morning in chapel to hear from four groups of students who traveled to do community service and learning over spring break. We have, with the YPCA and Campus Ministries, spring break trips that travel along the East Coast, typically, and in southern locations, serving in the name of Christ, and the friendships and relationships that are built along the way in just these 7 or 8 days are significant. Anyone who's been on a short-term mission or service assignment or going to conference or something like that together with a small group can understand the dynamic that's at play. We'll be hearing from the groups in this order. First, you can see Jubilee Partners from Comer, Georgia. This is a place where we've been connecting for spring break trips for a number of years, really the last 10 years. Some Goshen College goes there as well. For a while, we were on an every other year rotation, but lately it's been every year. Habitat for Humanity in, Spring Lake, New Jersey. I think the name Spring Lake is interesting because this is a coastal town, and it strikes me as a little odd. Maybe you have some history about that, to call a coastal town Spring Lake, but that's all right. And not my decision. Alterna Community, a new connect with Anton Maisonet Flores. He was here speaking in chapel in January. We built a partnership that looks like it might become an annual spring break location. And then serving with Appalachian People in Elkhorn, West Virginia, a place that we've gone several times for spring break. So we'll just take them in that order, bring reflections. So those who went to Jubilee Partners, if you're reporting, come on up.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Brooke Laycock, and this is Meg Green, and we're going to be sharing about our trip to Jubilee Partners in Comer, Georgia. So this is our group here, quite an eclectic group of all different kinds of people. None of us knew each other before the trip except for Lean at the bottom and Delight in the back. And by the end of the trip, like Brian was saying, we had some great friendships that formed. All different grades went, all different interests. And we really didn't know what we were getting in store for. We could read the Jubilee website, but it's hard to know what to expect sometimes. So I told my group to bring some dirty clothes and expect to have a good time and to work really hard, and it seems like that's what we got. We were all ready for adventure, and even on the way down, I could just tell with all the excitement we were gonna have a good time, especially with our random road trip stop to Cave Mountain Lake.
Hi. Okay. So Jubilee is an intentional Christian community, and it's really cool because each person, how many would you say live there?
Refugees or partners?
All together.
Yeah, how many? Yeah, how many people? Lots of people. Like 50?
Okay, 50 people. And each person only costs about $4,000 a year, and they pretty much like lived under the poverty line. They're founded in 1948, I believe. Is that two? Okay. And it basically just consists of the partners, which are the original founders, some original founders, and there's a process where you can become a partner. You have the volunteers who usually work more out in Jubilee more. And then you have the refugees that come from many different places, and they basically just teach them English, give them, you know, money to start their new lives, take them to dentist appointments, you know, just kind of like put them into our culture. Every day there was like a set time for meals, and before each meal, there would be about half an hour for worship, and you do all sorts of different things.
Prayer time, singing, devotions.
Yeah, and Jubilee is really, really sustainable. They, all their food pretty much comes from the gardens that they have or from the food banks. And it's, they have all their houses, so they're built facing the north, so they get all the sun. And they have wood stoves to heat the houses, and they do compost like us, and so just stuff like that.
Yeah, and you can see this building was kind of representative of the buildings you'd see there, just really weird and cool looking with the interesting architecture. So what did we do while we were there? Your typical service trip, we painted. We helped out in childcare because the refugees can go to English classes during the day, so they also offer childcare for the children. We helped out with that and went to a few English classes, and then did things around the farm like hauling wood and planting cedar trees, mulching, all kinds of things like that. But we also had an interesting opportunity. We got to go to a vigil for Kelly. I don't know how many of you have heard her story, but she was expected to be executed on the Monday that we got there. And so we heard about this, and it was an interesting case because it was the first woman who was to be executed in Georgia in 40 years. And she had a complete life transformation in prison. She became a theologian and got her degree in different things like that, and just has completely inspired people around her and changed her life and has a positive impact on all those around her. And so we are able to be a part of the vigil on the night that she was supposed to die, and it turns out that the drugs were bad and she's still alive. And it was really amazing to be a part of that. And a lot of us in our group didn't have much experience with like protesting or like even much knowledge on the death sentence, so it was really eye-opening for a lot of us. Along with the vigil and the work that we did, we had two lectures. One was on refugees, and one was a challenging one on listening to our brothers and sisters from the two-thirds world. We did some other things too. Go ahead, Meg.
Well, in the middle of the week, we went to the botanical gardens that they have there. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. And they had all these really cool like plants with all these weird names. And
do you remember any of the names?
It's like red riding, like it's like red hood beard tongue. Like yeah, put that in a pickup line, you guys. And what was really cool about it is they had this little plaque in the ground, and it was like Gardens for Peace, and it was like promoting peace through the international language of gardens. I thought that was so cool. And the last night, there was some dancing going on. Brooke went to that.
Mm-hmm. And Delight.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm sorry.
Not just me.
Yeah. Robert and I went on an armadillo hunt on Jubilee, and we found a possum, and we were looking for frogs, and we eventually found an armadillo that was dead, but they're still there. And we play flashlight tag, and there was a full moon out, and it was beautiful. And yes,
all right, so there's some random pictures to show for that. Thank you, Matt, for putting this together. And then another element that I just want to highlight real quick is the community that was formed, not just within our group, which definitely happened, but within the Jubilee community. Since there were only five of us, they were very intentional about reaching out to us and talking and telling us their story and listening to our story. And we had an opportunity towards the end of the week to eat dinner with families who were former people that stayed at Jubilee a few years ago and are now part of the community in Comer, Georgia. And yeah, it was just great hearing their stories, eating their food. This man is very strongly connected to the Baptist Church, the Kearney Baptist Church, and they have locations all over the United States that have just been growing exponentially in the last few years. And so we were eating dinner at his house, and then he invited us to go to his daughter's house. So we went over to his daughter's house randomly in the middle of our meal and hung out with his grandchildren, and it was just great to be in their presence and see how hospitable they were and open. So yeah, I'd just like to thank the Jubilee community and the Comer community right now publicly. And now Lean's going to talk about how she changed from this trip and what she really got out of it.
Hi, I'd like to share what I learned from Jubilee. Actually, my plan for spring break was taking a good rest. because this semester I was so tired of homework and exams, so I was looking forward to taking a rest during spring break. And one day, Delai came to me and talked about the white trip and Jubilee. I don't know why, but when I heard this from her, I just decided to go to Jubilee to serve, even though I didn't know exactly what the white trip and Jubilee were. So while taking a road trip to Georgia, I was wondering why God sent me to Jubilee instead of other options. And God made me realize the reason why he sent me there through a guy whose name is Don. Don is a co-founder of Habitat for Humanity and Jubilee Partners. And he was one of the thankful people who helped South Korea in the 1960s when South Korea was really poor. I heard that many Americans helped South Korea to overcome poverty in the 1960s before, but because it was the first time to meet and talk deeply with someone who helped, it was really inspiring to me. Further, after reading Ephesians chapters 2 and 3 before talking to Don, God confirmed to me that I'm supposed to help countries or people who are in similar circumstances to the 1960s South Korea. And the next day, God led me to read Ephesians chapters 5 and 6. Once more, I was able to realize why God sent me to Jubilee. Actually, I went to Jubilee to help them, but I learned a lot rather than serving them. And through those Bible verses and being at Jubilee, I was able to know that God wants me to go somewhere that needs his love. The life in Jubilee was a real blessing to me. I was able to give thanks to God every day and in every moment. I was thankful to God that he sent me to Jubilee with this wonderful team. Also, this trip gave me a really big challenge. Even though I'm majoring in nursing now, I don't know how God will use me in the future. But through this trip, I was able to know that God always works in my life delicately. Thank you.
And now a collective poem that we wrote one night. Each person put in two nouns, two verbs, and two adjectives, and Robert created this beautiful poem that kind of sums up our trip. And then after this, we'll be finished. So thank you so much for listening.
So I just called this Jubilee poem. Not a very creative title, but... This land of cave and mountain and lake, of armadillo, squirrel, and snake, cut by a bubbly, babbling brook, this island of spiritual purity has its own nook. Laotian and Honduran hike trails together. Clean American, dirty Cuban, walk as birds of a feather. Could such peaceful love be the afterbirth of hate? Is this adventurous baby from the mega folk dance of fate? As if a whispering tesseract linked every culture, scary to the distinguished robber of serenity's sculpture. I admire Jubilee, food, delight, primer to hope. I protest sleep, only awake we can cope against society's lethal injection of everything. The death of chiselment of condundering.
Hello, I'm Robert, and I was one of the co-leaders on the Habitat for Humanity trip that went to Spring Lake, New Jersey. And I'll be sharing some words that Catherine gave me to say. So, they sound weird, they're not mine. Our trip started Monday when all five of us loaded up in a van together and headed off to New Jersey. First Baptist Church in Manasquan hosted us for the week that we were in New Jersey. It was a 30-minute commute to the Habitat warehouse each morning and then more driving to assigned work site. A typical day for me started around 7:30 a.m. by waking up and cooking breakfast for the others in the church's kitchen that they generously gave us access to. Around 8:30, we loaded up in the van with our packed lunches and headed to the Habitat warehouse to wait for further instruction. We got an hour lunch break and worked until 3:30 p.m. The rest of the day was ours to do it with as we chose. Car time, music, Netflix, insulation, caulk, construction, and interpreting the GPS is how we spent our spring break. Bonding through jokes, music, movies, and food with five amazing people. Amanda, Fernando, Caleb, Robert, and Catherine. Time spent sleeping, building, and standing on snow-covered beaches. Our evenings are spent snuggled in blankets in our warm beds, exploring new places, learning new skills, and pushing each other to safely step outside of our comfort zone. Our trip was an adventure. Thanks.
Good morning. Alterna is a bilingual community of Christ followers devoted to faithful acts of hospitality, mercy, and justice.
The members of Alterna share fully in the life of the community, taking an active part in its prayer and liturgy, meals, meetings, and helping with ordinary and extraordinary tasks.
A theologian and friend to Alterna by the name of Dr. Gilbert Bilezikian clearly reminds us of the centrality of community in the sweep of salvation history. Reclaimed by Christ, they seek to love one another, serve one another, know one another, and celebrate one another in such a way that they demonstrate a radical alternative to the kingdom of this world.
Over the course of a week, we were able to partake in this wonderful community. We were dispersed into homestays with community members, welcomed into their sacred spaces, their silly moments, their family times. Throughout, we noted their radical displays of hospitality, generosity, and their kindness.
So beyond exploring the community, our learning was centered on examining immigrants' rights and looking for ways that those civil rights overlapped and complemented the civil rights movement. Over the course of the week, we were privileged to so many rich experiences.
On the first day, we spent learning the narrative of the town that Alterna was nestled within. By driving through and noting the segregation, we visually perceived how structural violence has made itself manifest.
We spent time engaging the other, people with the label of illegal or immigrant, those held in detention centers, and we fellowshipped and vigiled with those on death row. We experienced a worldwide community, a full and deep interconnectedness.
By breaking out of our normal routine, we truly experienced diversity. We delighted in the taste of internationally inspired, locally produced foods. We rested in the homes of the unfamiliar, and we were wooed and endeared by unfamiliar languages.
So over the course of this week, we were stretched and we grew, and we couldn't possibly consolidate all of what we experienced into a 5 to 7 minute slot. So we'll share with you 3 stories now, but please come and ask us to tell you more.
So most of our focus on this trip was on current human rights issues like immigration, and then, as they mentioned, the death penalty and what that means. But later in the week, we also started focusing on the civil rights movement. It was the 50-year anniversary of the March in Selma, and we had been discussing that as a group. And so it was just a really good time and place to learn about those events while we were down in the South. So on Thursday, we went to Atlanta and visited the Martin Luther King Jr. Historical Site. There was a museum, there was a mural, which might have been on the slideshow earlier. And then we also got to go and sit inside Ebenezer Baptist Church, which is where Dr. King attended, where he preached, where his family went to church. And then on Friday, we went to Selma, as you can see. We were there the day before President Obama was, so that was kind of cool. We could like feel the tension and the excitement, because the next day was the official recreation of the march, which I saw on the news had such a big turnout they almost had to cancel it, but they did go through with it. There was thousands of people walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. It was really neat to be there during that time. And while we were there, we attended a seminar called Building a Movement from the Ground Up at Brown Chapel. There was a lot of speakers talking about how we need grassroots movements, we need more individual relationships if we want to build big movements, and I thought that was really great. And then something really awesome that Becca and I got to experience, we were walking down the street and we saw a guy with a shirt that said, Selma 50th anniversary, I was there. So we were kind of like, do we ask him? Like, but yeah, we went up to and talked to him, and he told us his story of how he had been at the march 50 years ago with Dr. King. He kind of gave us his story of like how that felt. Being in the second kind of rank to go through on the bridge and like seeing the brutality. So yeah, that was amazing. And he had such a young face. I couldn't believe that I was talking to somebody who would be old enough to have been there. Like, that was a real reality check for me that this is still current, this is still extremely relevant.
So one of the days we visited an immigrant detention center. It's called Stewart's Detention Center. And there's some really interesting things about that. For example, it is like for profit, so a private company runs it, and there's a lot to say about that. But what was really meaningful for me was that we got to talk to some of the people detained there. And I am from Honduras, and I got to talk to somebody that was also from Honduras. So we just talked about, for the first part, we just talked about like soccer and just things back home, things that we had in common that we both experienced as Hondurans. And then we got into more like serious things, like why he had come to the U.S. and just about his life and things like that. So the two main things that they were really meaningful or thought-provoking to me were first something about like his life, and it was like how many how most immigrants don't really want to leave their families, don't really wouldn't really not choose to like leave their homes and like leave everything they know, but how they are forced to because of violence or criminality or the lack of employment. So he was just telling me how first he had come to U.S. ten years ago to like find better employment opportunities, and then he was deported, and then he was gonna like stay there and try to like make his life there, but some people tried to murder him. So he had to like once again like flee the country really forcefully. He didn't really want to come back, but he was given no other chance. So yeah, I was just reflecting how like some people are like forced to, and how we don't really understand the conditions in other countries that force people to immigrate. And the second thing that was really thought-provoking had more to do with my relationship to others. And how like I'm an immigrant in this country, but how I get much different treatment from people here just because there's like a paper that says that I'm okay to be here. So just thinking about like the different treatments and the different ways that we see people just because of like something so trivial like a paper or like a little passport visa kind of thing. So yeah.
This trip became really personal for me on Wednesday. Like Diego was sharing, we went to the detention center, and that evening I got word from my home congregation in First Mennonite Church of Iowa City that our sister church, who meets there every Sunday, Tuere Fuerte, was dealing with chaos as their pastor was being detained and possibly deported. His name is Max Villatoro. I think there's been a lot of hype about him, especially in the Mennonite circles. And so as we were learning all about immigrant rights and visiting people, he's also from Honduras. So as we were learning about that and hearing narratives and trying to be God's love to these people, this was all going on in my home church. And so that really hit me hard. And I brought that situation to this group of amazing people, and they just took it in their hands, and we became kind of a unified group in solidarity with Max. And so we actually went to ICE headquarters in Atlanta with signs, as we have today, and we stood out there in freezing cold, and we sang hymns, and we contacted people. Anton was amazing with his connections. He just contacted a bunch of people, and it just sort of happened, and people sort of recognized that throughout the nation, people cared about this situation. They cared about Max, and they didn't want him to be deported. So just a few little facts. So initially there was a petition and they wanted 500 signatures, and there's some articles that say there's approximately 40,000 people who have signed this saying they don't want Max to be deported. They want him to stay in the United States with his family. He's been here for 20 years. He has 4 children. They're US citizens. And so last night in my hometown, there was a protest at the pedestrian mall of Iowa City, and there was over 200 people there with signs. They approximated that he would be deported yesterday, but that didn't happen. He was moved to LaSalle, Louisiana yesterday, and they're just hoping it would probably be within the next 3 days that he would be deported. So people are just coming together and praying and hoping that this man stays with his family. So here are a couple quotes. This is from his wife, Gloria. She says, "I was happy about it, but he's still in the line. I was very thankful that he's not deported today, but it's just very hard to give a word to my kids and tell them that this is going to end soon. I trust that God will do something, but I don't have the words to say to them. All I can say is that we need to pray." And then Anthony, who talked at the protest last night, says this, I was told that there was a plane going to Honduras today, and that that could have been the last time that I saw my father. Now there's a little bit of hope," he says. "I want to get the word out to people to be aware of the broken systems of immigration and how immigrant families are affected by this." And so we have a few words from Amy about how we can move forward and support this cause. And just really quickly, though, last night I got an email from Tammy Alexander, who is the senior legislative associate from MTC in DC. And she asked that we get EMU involved, and she asked that I would sort of try to gauge if students would be interested in having a protest in DC sometime within the next week. It needs to be soon. So that's a lot of work, and it's something that I'm still trying to figure out if it could actually happen. But if you're interested, please see me. Thank you.
The kingdom of heaven is not a place where families are meant to be separated, or a place where pastors are meant to be separated from their congregations. But for Max Villatoro, this is a potential reality. One prominent lesson we learned from our week was that faith and action go hand in hand. And we look at Jesus' life, we see that he was an advocate for the poor, for the vulnerable, and for people who are silent. And we think about these own implications for our lives, we realize that our own voice is meant to be used to speak up for those who are silent. And so one small action that that we can all individually do. I have a piece of paper here that you can take along when you walk out of chapel, and it has numbers of ICE offices that you can call. It has a little bit of background for Max, but individually we can all do something as small as just calling the ICE office, but collectively that sends a very big message in terms of their own decision and while they're thinking about Max's situation. So I urge you as you walk out to take this piece of paper, and if you don't call, just to keep Max in your prayers, as well as the 34,000 individuals that are deported from America every day. Thank you.
Okay, hi, I'm Melinda Norris, and myself and Phil Yoder and Jared Christoffel co-led a trip to Elkhorn, West Virginia with MCC's SWAP, along with Vivian Tejeda, Evan Knappenberger, Renita Schenk, and Gemma Hedrick, and Katie, I just lost your last name.
Ekman.
Katie Ekman, who are going to share with us, and then I will close us. Yeah.
Okay, so whenever you go on a trip like this, it's kind of hard, or it takes a while to process all that happened, and it's difficult to share the impact of it in words. But there was definitely a lot that I take away from this trip, from seeing a new area and learning about Appalachian culture, to just finding fulfillment in serving with others, to building up new friendships. I appreciated all of those parts, but I think one of my favorite things about it was the camaraderie and friendship that I felt within our group. We were divided into smaller work groups and sent to work at different houses and do things like painting or plumbing or reflooring. So by the end of the day, when we all came back together to eat dinner, we each had all kinds of stories and jokes to tell. Renita soon became nicknamed Crow-Nita for the sheer strength with which she wields a crowbar. One day, when it rained a lot, Phil and I had to build a path with cement blocks through a flooded basement in order to finish plumbing. And Clodie was the real star of the show wherever we went, always getting attention from someone. So I just have so many good memories and learnings from the trip. And I would say, if you're a student here, definitely consider going on a Y trip next year, because I wouldn't have wanted to miss out on this one.
I'm Renita. I'm just going to share one story about one of my favorite parts of the week. So one of the best things for me was getting to know Henrietta, who was the homeowner where Jared, Evan, and I worked. And regardless of what Katie says about Cronita, I'm actually not that good at construction. So I had a lot of time to just sit and talk with Henrietta. And I got to hear a lot about her life and her experiences. And I thought that was really valuable. And I also got to talk to her about kind of our group. And I told her that we really liked to sing and play music. And as the week went on, some really difficult situations came up in Henrietta's life. And so Friday morning, she actually needed to leave to go be with her family. But before she left, most of our group, we got our hymnals and we got our instruments and we all went down to her house and just sat around and played, just sang and played songs, both some that we had prepared and some of her requests. And I just thought that this moment really captured what service is about. And I think it's about just being with other people. And I was so glad that we could be there with Henrietta during that time.
Yeah, a lot of times where we were meeting strangers, we were meeting people with maybe different backgrounds, different walks of life than our own. All it took was a hymnal and a guitar, and we were instantly connected, which was really beautiful. I'm going to share a song. It's based off of St. Teresa's Prayer that we as a group and our MCC leaders sang together every night in between dinner and our, I guess, free evenings. We had a sort of reflection, devotional time together. So, Christ has no body now but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes through which he looks, compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which he blesses all the world. Yours are the hands, yours are the feet. Yours are the eyes, yours are his body. Christ has no body now on earth but yours.